This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Oh, My Dragon by Lonnie Lynn Vale, narrated by Kendall Taylor and Mason Lloyd. Chapter 1. Some girls watched Beauty and the Beast and wanted the prince. I want the library. Meme. Wink. The stairs screamed in protest as I made my way back down the ladder. I hated my job. Well and truly hated it. I had no clue why I continued to do it when I hated it so much. In fact, if I'd just quit already, I would be free to do my photography full time. But that was the thing about me. I hated quitting. Anything. It didn't matter what it was. A sport, a novel, a job. They were all the same in my book. Not to mention that I had no guarantee that next month would be as good as this month. Christmas was now over, and I'd realized that if I managed to get at least 6 clients a month, I could make enough to carry me through until next month. I also sold my photography as well. Anything I was able to sell was an added bonus that gave me a tiny cushion and made everything a little bit easier. But my brain was still stuck in poor mode, meaning that I couldn't quit. Not when my mind still had me eating ramen noodles, when my bank account clearly could accommodate Velveeta mac and cheese. My brain just couldn't process that I was in the black on the balance sheet, not the red. So, until I was confident in that, it meant I had to stick it out at my day job. Once I had enough in my savings to hold me for a year, then I'd know it was time to stop my day job and pursue my passion. But not until then. Not after the last 4 years. Which was why I was currently crawling down the steps of the upstairs loft in my client's house. I was a professional cleaner. Or maid, if you wanted to get all technical and shit. I worked for a man who I never saw. Yet he always managed to make a huge fucking mess. My guess was that he only came out at night, after I was gone. That would certainly explain why I never saw him. It would also explain why his house was such a freaking pigsty every other morning when I came back. Last night, it appeared he'd had another party, because there were dishes and cups everywhere, as well as questionable things on his sheets. My boss owned a large house on the outskirts of Dallas, right on the lake. It was a 3-story monstrosity that was the bane of my existence. But alas, I had it clean. For today, at least. Now it was time to go home. Which I did not 5 minutes later, being sure to lock up so I didn't get another threatening letter from my boss for forgetting. Which I never did. Ever. I was a freak about locks. I had 6 of them on my door at home, as well as a reinforced door, a security chain, and a half-assed security system I'd bought off of Amazon. So yes, I understood all too well the importance of locking doors. Something I'd found out the hard way. Meaning I didn't screw up when it came to locking a door, especially not someone's that I had to go into, where there were so many freaking places to hide. After locking up, I made my way home, thankful that the day's traffic was over with. Mostly. The interstate was always busy, but it was nothing like the 5 o'clock rush hour. Today, as I drove by Taco Bell and decided to get myself a burrito, and I ate in the car on the way home, I told myself that tomorrow I would start my diet. Tomorrow I would lose the 10 pounds I'd been promising to do for the last half a year. But would it even matter if I did? It was highly unlikely that I would find anyone. Not unless I can meet them in traffic, at my boss's shitty big house, or at the houses where I painted my murals. Speaking of murals, my best friend and brother from another mother, Shane, chose that moment to call. "Hello?" I answered, pulling into my driveway. "Why, oh why, do I not know how to paint yet?" he asked me. I laughed. "Because you like to work with metal," I said amusingly. "And you don't paint well."
"You like to sculpt with metal, but you can paint too," he countered.
"That's true," I said, getting out of my car, being sure to grab the trash from my devoured burrito out of the cup holder. I sighed and started up the front path that led to my apartment, then even further inside the building. "What are you doing tonight?" I asked him.
Working at the bar, he said almost distractedly. Hey, can I call you back? I think someone's here.
He hung up before I could reply, and I sighed, dropping my phone into my purse and hitching the handles back over my shoulder. I had no life. Really, I didn't. I'd work my ass off all day. And what did I have to show for it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No friends besides one who was a self-proclaimed workaholic, and another who hated going out and doing anything, and that included spending time with me, unless she was between books. A job that I hated. I had nothing. Except a dead body lying in the middle of the hallway leading to my apartment, and a man leaning over that body. I didn't scream, though. No, I did something stupid. I pulled out my phone and took a picture right when his head turned. He tensed, and it was then that I did the only smart thing I'd done in all day. I ran. I'd never been more thankful in my life that I only wore tennis shoes everywhere I went. The jeans were a hindrance since they were so tight, but they didn't stop my legs from pumping or slowing me down. Not with my heart beating 90 miles an hour and all that adrenaline coursing through my veins. The soft curse of the male who'd been leaning over my neighbor's dead body sounded from behind me, and then his heavy footsteps ate up the distance. I ran faster. So fast, in fact, that I ran right out of my shoe. I didn't dare stop for it, though. I kept going, down the steps, out the door, and around the corner to the laundry room. I made it through the door and got it shut and locked, eyes on the handle, just in case he somehow had superpowers that made him able to open the lock without a key. I bid him good luck. I wasn't able to do it even with the key, which was why the residents of the building had started leaving it open for that very reason. I kept staring at it, as I backed up towards the stairs that led inside the building. I had just made it to the steps, when I felt it. A man, the man's steely arm circled my waist, pulling me back against his hard chest. I opened my mouth to scream, but found that my vocal cords didn't work, mostly because the man's hand had tightened around my throat, putting pressure there and letting me know that freaking out was not the way to go right then. My body, however, didn't get that memo. Using my hands, feet, head, and teeth, I started to thrash wildly. My arms dug into the flesh of the man's hands. My feet started kicking at his shins, and my head turned to the side so I could bury my teeth in his shoulder. His other hand came up, though, and squeezed my jaw until I had no choice but to let go of him. And once I was free, he held my head in place and spoke softly in my ear.
"I didn't kill her," he growled. "But the man who did is still here. He hasn't left the building, so please shut the fuck up and be still."
I froze, utterly and completely. I also don't know why I believed him, but I did. The sureness in his voice, the complete truthfulness I could hear from that raspy, dark tenor, had me believing him. And I went limp in his arms, no longer fighting. "Where?" I managed to squeak out. My voice worked this time.
"I don't know,"
he whispered almost soundlessly.
"But I need you to go into your apartment and not come out."
I started to panic slightly. "How do you know whomever it is isn't in my apartment?" I asked wildly.
"Because I can see his trail,"
he answered, pulling me back and confusing me all at once. He started walking, me supported in his hands now, until he'd stepped over the lifeless body of my neighbor.
"Go."
I went, straight to my apartment, where I then called the police.
Ian. "What happened?" the cop asked me. I fought the urge to tell him, "None of your fucking business," but only just barely. Narrowing my eyes, I sent my stories into his subconscious, giving him the idea that I'd explained it all sufficiently. The cop nodded. "You can go. Please don't step through the crime scene again. Use the emergency stairs." He pointed to the hallway just to the side of the woman's door. Wink. My hand burned where I'd touched her neck earlier, and I had to also battle the urge to knock on her apartment door and demand she come with me. At least until the fucker who'd killed her neighbor was caught. I had a nagging suspicion that this wouldn't be the end of it. Whomever had killed Farrell's girl had done so because he knew who Farrell was. That had been the only impressions I could get before Winkett interrupted me, with terror in her eyes as she ran from the sight of the murder victim. My eyes went down to the body of the woman again, and I had to resist the urge to place my hands on her again. See, dead people told stories. Not too many, but some of the people on this earth were sensitive to ghosts. Me being one of them. I was what one would call a retrocognitive, or in layman's terms, I was able to see things that happened after they happened. I received that gift, as well as the gift of healing, from my dragon, Mace. Mace was my bonded dragon and had been since I was 19. Being 36 now, I'd had Mace for 17 years and would hopefully have him for many years to come. But the fact is, there were times that I wanted to kill him just for the fact that he liked to mess with me. He liked to make my life harder than it needed to be, and at times it went overboard before he realized he'd gone too far. Like now, for instance. I was ready to go, and he was nowhere in sight. He knew I wanted to leave, knew I needed to leave, yet he wasn't here. "Mace," I said through gritted teeth, "where are you?" If I didn't leave soon, I'd likely lose whatever patience I had left and go back up the stairs, ruining what I'd put in place by taking the woman who had made my dick stir for the first time in well over a year. Which was why I started walking instead of staying there any longer, waiting for my wayward dragon who thought he was being funny when he wasn't. I was about a mile away when I heard the flapping of Mace's wings from behind me. He landed just long enough for me to sweep myself gracefully onto his back before he was up and away, heading straight for my house. The house that, incidentally, was the same house that Wink cleaned 3 times a week. I smelled her the minute I walked in the door to my domain. She smelled sweet with a hint of flowers, honeysuckle and vanilla to be specific. And it was everywhere. Before, it had just been a simple indulgence on my part. I'd wanted her here, in my domain. I wanted her smell to permeate everything around me, stuff that I made a part of my home, just to see if she'd like it. And mostly, she did. When I'd get home from work, I'd go over the video footage of her day. I watched her clean, watched her sweat, watched her cheeks become pink. Sometimes I purposefully made my place dirtier just to see her work a little bit harder than normal. And she always did. My favorite days were Wednesdays because that's when she got down on her knees and scrubbed my kitchen and bathroom floors. It was a toss-up with Mondays because that is when Wink changed the sheets on my bed. Having her scent on my sheets made me happy. Well, as happy as I could be without actually having the object of that happiness in the bed with me. I'd just slipped off of Mace, my feet meeting the spongy grass that surrounded the outside of my home when I heard a voice that grated on my nerves. "Where have you been?" I swallowed hard, trying to keep my temper in check, and turned. "Cleaning up your mess." "Seems like you were making a bigger one rather than cleaning one up," Kiefer snapped. "Why were you there?" I crossed my arms over my chest. "Your brother was there, and you asked me to keep tabs on him and his whereabouts." "Remember?" I said calmly, even though what I was feeling was definitely anything but calm. "I wish you'd move in with the rest of us." Kiefer, the king of dragons, growled in frustration as he took a look around my house. I didn't bother to answer him. It was a constant battle with Kiefer and me. He wanted me to live at the sanctuary with the rest of them, but I couldn't do that. "You know why I can't," I said. He nodded. "I know," he said. "It doesn't change the fact that I would like you to stay there. We're safer in numbers." I just stared at him, and he sighed. "Shouldn't you be with your wife and children?" I asked, hoping that'd get him to leave. My hopes were dashed when he shook his head. "They're at home," he said, "but my brother's not." I nodded. "Understandable," I said. "You know what happened?" He nodded. "Listened to the police scanners, and Johnson kept me updated. Kiefer said. Wanted to hear from you exactly what happened, though. I sighed and recounted how I'd walked in on his brother who'd been hovering over the dead girl's body. How did you know it wasn't him? He questioned. A trail of DNA that led from the body into the apartment across the hall from hers, where the tweaker who used to call the cops on the two of them all the time lives, I explained. Kiefer's eyes narrowed. And the girl? He asked. Which girl? I hesitated. There were two, after all. The one who got dead, Kiefer said slowly, rolling his eyes like he was trying hard to contain his annoyance. I shrugged. She's dead. What more do you want to know? I asked. Kiefer rolled his eyes again. Why is getting information out of you like pulling teeth? He asked angrily. I snapped my mouth shut on the retort that wanted to burst free of my lips, barely containing my knee-jerk reaction to go on the defensive at the first hint of a threat. She's dead. She was dead for a long time when I found her. Her murderer watched from the comfort of his peephole as he waited for someone to find her for over an hour. I followed the fucker to the jail, then stood outside his cell, making sure his heart stopped, apparently from natural causes. Is that what you want to know? Kiefer's eyes narrowed. You can't just go around killing humans, even if they are guilty, Kiefer growled. I turned my back on my king and then shut the door behind me. I couldn't deal with that man anymore. Not if he wanted me to still be a part of the team, if that's what it was even called anymore. My throat burned as Wink's sweet and flowery scent hit me the moment I walked through the door. It took everything I had not to go straight to the TV and replay the day's events. Instead, I walked to the kitchen, grabbed the bottle of whiskey that was sitting on the kitchen counter, and proceeded to drink the entire fucking bottle.
Chapter 2. I have three moods. One, what the fuck? Two, are you fucking kidding me? Three, fuck this. Wink's secret thoughts. Wink. The next day dawned bright and early, and I was just stepping out of my apartment when I ran into something solid. Oomph, I groaned. I looked up, and my neck stretched painfully. I'd had a rough night. It had started out bad due to the dead body between my apartment and me, and got worse when I had to run for my life and was caught by a beast of a man. The shit show that was my day was capped off with me not getting a wink of sleep. I did manage to get one hell of a crick in my neck, however. Surprisingly, though, it wasn't because of the dead woman, but because of the sexy man who I didn't see again after I closed my apartment door on him. The one who was the cause of my sleepless night. I cursed myself for not looking in the mirror before I'd thrown my pants on. I was on the way to my darkroom to develop the newest shots I'd captured during my lunch break yesterday. First, though, I had to get the processing chemicals delivered. I'd just gotten the door open and had started to back out with the door handle in one hand and my keys in the other, when my body hit something solid. Solid, as in steel. I turned and found myself getting lost in those same captivating eyes as last night. Hey, I whispered. Can I help you? He stared at me for a long couple of seconds before he blinked, and his lips lifted in the barest of smiles. This caused my heart to race and my face to flush. Now, I wasn't so happy I'd decided to just leave instead of taking an extra 5 minutes to look after my appearance before exiting my apartment. Gosh, I'm sorry, I said, stepping back. His eyes went down to my face and even further to my neck.
It's okay,
he muttered, his eyes focused.
You want to catch breakfast?
I lifted my hand self-consciously and ran it along the column of my throat, surprised at the tenderness there. Studying him, I licked my lips and began to appreciate the fine specimen of man in front of me. He was tall and built with dark black hair and a strong jaw. He was wearing a leather jacket and a scarf? It didn't detract from the manliness that exuded from him, however. He was what you would think of when you thought male. Strong jaw, jacked arms and tight abs, dark, captivating looks, big hands, large feet. The scarf, though, That was weird.
Breakfast, he asked again.
I snapped out of my contemplation of his manliness and shook my head. No, I said softly, clearing my throat. I have to go meet the guys who are delivering my chemicals.
I had to have certain chemicals to run my photo lab, and if I didn't meet them at this ungodly hour, they wouldn't be able to get back to me until late next week, meaning I was up to meet them at the ass crack of dawn instead of sleeping in my nice, warm bed. He looked at me, then nodded.
Care if I tag along? He asked gruffly. Then we can get breakfast afterward.
I bit my lip. What the hell was going on? This man was gorgeous. I'm talking so fucking handsome that it hurt to look at him for too long. And his eyes, God, they were practically sucking me into his soul. What would he want with someone like me? I was not beautiful. In fact, I was so far from beautiful, especially without makeup on, that I would consider myself troll-like. Well, perhaps troll-like was exaggerating a little. But that's what it felt like sometimes, especially right now. I was nauseous as hell. My hair was in a knotted ponytail on the top of my head. My eyes had deep bags under them. And he was everything I was not. I said. I don't... See, here's the problem. I didn't really know how to say no. Never had. Which was why I ended up selling my house when my every intention had been to say no. However, the money had spoken to me, and here I was. Which was why I said, sure. He grinned and backed up, allowing me to step into the hallway. I turned and locked the doors with my keys before dropping them into the top of my bag and zipping it up.
Where's the house you're working from? He asked.
I blinked. I told you about my house? I asked in confusion. I didn't tell anybody that I worked in a house. In fact, I know I didn't tell him. I was already somewhat nervous around him. There was no way I would have told him where I worked.
Last night, he said swiftly. You were talking about it when you came up the stairs.
My mouth dropped open slightly in relief. I had been talking about the house when I'd rounded the stairs.
Yeah, I said. It's on the south side.
He blinked.
Why'd you want to have a studio over there?
He asked curiously, offering me his hand when he started going down the stairs. I ignored it, and instead grabbed the rickety banister that ran the length of the stairs, mainly because I wasn't sure if I grabbed a hold of his hand if I'd be able to let it go. There was something about this man that affected me, and I didn't even know him. I'd seen him a total of 2 times, and the first time had been under less than ideal circumstances. Speaking of which, so how did last night go? I asked softly. I tried to come back and see what was going on, but the cop told me to stay inside my apartment until they could clear the crime scene. I fell asleep about an hour later with all of them stomping around in the hall.
They found the man who did it in the apartment across the hall from yours. He was trying to burn his clothes in the kitchen sink,
the man mumbled.
Apparently he did it because she scorned him. I didn't get much before I was told to leave, too.
What's your name? I asked suddenly, stopping next to my old truck. His eyes seemed to be alight with some inner fire.
Ian. Liam Ian McHugh.
I blinked. That was a powerful name. That's a cool name, I said demurely, turning my back on him to open my truck's door. He crowded me close, and my heart started hammering. Not because I was afraid, though, but because of his nearness. I wanted to lean into his body about as badly as I wanted to take my next breath. Press my breasts against his solid chest. Did I, though? No. I managed to just barely bring my heart under control and turned my back on him, sliding into the seat of my dually. I was about to give Liam directions when he pushed me over, sliding my body across the seat as he moved into the driver's seat, and my ass was planted in the passenger seat for the first time in my life.
"Wait," I said. "You can't drive my truck."
"Why not?"
he asked, taking the keys from me and finding the right one before starting it up.
"Because I don't have you on my insurance," I mumbled. "And I don't know you."
His hand went up to his neck as he ran his fingers underneath the scarf he was wearing.
"Yet," he murmured. "You don't know me yet."
I didn't bother replying.
"Where to?"
he asked. I bit my lip. He sighed and reached for the GPS, tapping a few buttons before he made a triumphant sound and backed out of the parking lot.
"Never mind," he said, putting it into drive and pulling out into traffic. "I found it without your help."
I cursed myself. I should know better than to leave that kind of information in the GPS, but I relied on it way too much. I was one of those directionally challenged people who rarely, if ever, was able to find her way from point A to point B without getting lost.
"Ian," I said, "I don't really know you that well. I think we should maybe start with dinner later and go from there."
The words that left my mouth were the right ones, but what I was feeling on the inside was anything but.
"Breakfast," Ian said, mostly ignoring me and what I had to say.
"What?" I asked in confusion.
"You said dinner, and we're having breakfast," he answered distractedly. "Your truck needs to be aligned."
I blinked.
"No, it doesn't. I just took it in to get aligned and had the tires rotated," I said smartly.
"You'll have to tell me who you took it to, because it's obvious that whomever did it was an imbecile," he growled, pulling into traffic and merging onto the freeway.
Under his breath, I could have sworn I heard him murmur, "Dumbass." I licked my lips and tried not to stare at the way the corded muscles of his wrist bunched and shifted with each move of his arm. Instead, I chose to fill the silence by telling him about me, out of pure nervousness rather than my wanting him to know anything more about me. Because had I been thinking straight, likely this would have been one of those times where I realized that me telling him about myself probably was more of a turn-off than a turn-on.
"I'm 31, I blurted.
His eyes moved from the road to me, then back to the road.
"I'm 36, he said softly.
My eyes widened.
"You don't look a day over 30, I informed him. "But my best friend doesn't either. He could totally pass for 25 in a pinch. He still gets carded when we go out gambling."
"You have a brother?"
he asked. I nodded, picking invisible lint off my pants. "Yeah," I confirmed. "He's in the Navy. I haven't seen him in almost 10 years now, though." I could feel his eyes on me, and I turned my head slightly to the left and smiled sadly at him.
"I have a sister," he said. "But she was adopted when we were younger, and I haven't seen her since."
"Have you tried to find her?" I asked. He nodded.
"When I was younger, around 18 or so. Stopped when I turned 21, he said, turning his blinker on and leaning back in his seat.
His hand rested on the gear shift, and I let my eyes trail along the strong limb all the way up to his face, which was on me.
"What?"
I asked.
"You aren't scared of me," he stated.
That was true. I wasn't. Why? I couldn't tell you. There was something about him that made my heart feel almost light. "There's something familiar about you," I answered him. "I don't know what it is, but I feel like I know you." He smiled.
"You do know me," he said. "Just not officially yet."
My eyebrows quirked in confusion.
"What?"
I asked. "How?"
"You work for me."
"Kind of,"
he said, putting the truck into second gear as the light turned green. I watched his feet move as I tried to make sense of his words. Then understanding dawned.
"You're..." "Oh my God! You're the slob!" I crowed somewhat loudly.
He looked over at me with a glare as he shifted into third, then looked back to the road. He didn't answer until he turned into the parking lot of my studio and shut the truck off. Which was about the time I realized I'd never told him exactly where I was going, nor did I tell him how to get there. I wasn't sure how he knew where to look on the GPS to even lead him here.
That was about the time that my psycho radar started to go off. And I remembered all those scary movies my friend Maddie made me watch when we were younger. I'd literally just put myself in the stupid girl's shoes from my favorite scary movie.
You know the one where the girl gets into the car with the sexy man, and then he drives her to a shack in the woods and shows her his doll collection made out of human skin? I'd literally put myself into her shoes. Of course, Ian had taken me to where I worked, not his house. Not that he had a doll collection made out of human skin. I'd cleaned his house enough to know that he did not have one. That wasn't to say that I wasn't currently freaking out over nothing, though. I moved my hand along the side of the door, feeling for the latch, and crowed triumphantly inside when I found it.
"Don't run," he sighed. "I knew I shouldn't have told you."
My eyes went wide when he yanked the collar at his throat and started to itch furiously. He had a tattoo, a huge one on his neck. And when he saw where I was looking, he yanked the stupid scarf back into place and stared at me expectantly. Oh, yeah. I was supposed to be running, I remembered. Sadly, he reached out and grabbed my wrist before I could reach for the handle once again, holding me in an iron-tight grip that would be next to impossible to break. And then panic fueled my desire to get away, which set something off in me that I hadn't realized was there. Warmth shot out of my wrist where his hand connected directly to my skin, and I pushed that energy outwards, almost as if I was forcing whatever had built up under my skin at him. One second, Ian had a hold of my hand and was tugging me toward him, and the next, he was lying with his big body slumped over the front seat of my truck, dead to the world. My mouth dropped open, and I wondered if he was playing with me. But when I kicked him in the head in my haste to get out, he didn't move, not even to let out a groan. He just laid there, and I wasn't sure if he was even breathing. I stopped, just like any stupid movie girl would, and looked at him in dismay. He hadn't actually been threatening me. He'd only asked me not to run. I hadn't given him the chance to explain, and now he was dying because of something that I'd done to him. Not that I could tell anyone what I'd done, since I had no idea what it even was. I couldn't figure it out myself. I crept forward and started to press my hand against his head. But I froze. Instead, I picked up the old windshield wiper that was in the floorboard of my truck and poked him with it. Nothing. Nada. Zilch. The next time I poked him slightly harder, and still there was no response from him. "Sweet baby Jesus," I whispered, reaching over him into his pocket. I found first a set of keys, and then a phone, and smiled. Opening the phone, surprised that there wasn't some sort of lock on it, I flipped through the recent calls on his phone, choosing to go to the first person on his call list, someone who he has called more than once, a man named Kiefer. The call took no time at all to connect, and 5 seconds after the first ring, a man answered with a terse, "You're fucking late."
"I am?" I asked.
There was silence on the other end of the line, and I almost kicked myself for saying that.
"Who is this?"
the man asked. "Listen," I said, backing away from Ian. "I accidentally hurt..." I choked on that word. "Ian, he's gonna need a ride."
"Where are you?" the man asked, much more tense this time. "What'd you do to him? If you hurt him in any way, I will find you and I will make sure you suffer a fate worse than death."
"Where have I heard that before?" I muttered stubbornly. "Your threats are weak." I got combative when I was nervous. Did I mention that before? The man growled, and I decided that was enough teasing. We're at a studio parking lot in the business district downtown, corner of Lexington and Kentucky, I finally said, after my senses came back to me. "I'm going to leave him propped up against the side of the building. Okay?" I hung up before he could reply, and I looked at the man slumped in my seat. There was no way I could move him by myself. So I looked at the corner where the old man who tried to feed me every night usually stood smoking, and smiled. "Mr. Chang," I said loudly.
Can you help me for a minute?
5 minutes later, Ian was propped up as best as he could get against the building, and I was starting my truck and backing out of the parking lot. After a quick wave to Mr. Chang, I peeled out of the parking lot and drove straight for the last place Ian would ever think to look for me. His place. It was big. He'd never find me. I'd use the time while he was looking for me to come up with a better plan. Maybe once I could think straight, I could come up with something more plausible. Until then, I was too fucking scared. Plus, I had a key. Something told me that anywhere else I decided to go, he'd find me. If I used my credit cards or bank cards somewhere, it was likely he could trace me through them. I had to go somewhere that was free. It was a good idea. Right?
Chapter 3 People. Not a fan. Ian's secret thoughts. Ian. Get the fuck off me, I said through clenched teeth. Kiefer stepped back and glared. You got yourself knocked out by a girl? Kiefer asked. What were you doing to her? Trying to force yourself on her? My fists clenched in indignation. I just stared at my king and thought about never telling him anything ever again. So I had fucking kinky desires. So fucking what? I never did a goddamn thing without the explicit consent of the other party involved. And just because he'd walked in one fucking time when he heard my sex partner screaming no wasn't my fault. The girl had laughed when I'd been pulled off her, and she'd laughed even more when she'd explained to Kiefer that it was all consensual. That was really why I didn't live at the sanctuary with them. Once was enough to be interrupted during sex. Why aren't you looking at me? Kiefer growled. He grabbed the scarf that was miraculously still around my neck, and on instinct I jerked away. His hand held onto the scarf, though, exposing my neck to his gaze. Motherfucker, Kiefer growled. I sighed and stood up, my feet feeling like limp noodles as I backed away from him. Get off me, I said, lifting my hand. You're giving me a fucking headache. Do you have your powers? Kiefer persisted. I sighed. No, I answered. Why are you so calm about this? He asked. I gave him a look. Because it's a normal process, I answered him. His eyes narrowed. How do you even know about this? He asked. I never told you. I blinked in surprise. Do you think we're all stupid? I asked him. He didn't reply. You do, don't you? I asked. Well, let me tell you, we're not. We know what goes on. Everyone does. The men and women. The fucking servants. And the way y'all fight and fuck so loud doesn't help keep it a secret either. Kiefer's face darkened to a mottled red. That doesn't explain how you know, he said. And from what I remember reading, only the members of the royal blood mate. You're not of royal blood. I would know if I had a brother walking around out there who I hadn't met yet. My stomach pinched. Psychometry, I said. His eyebrows furrowed. What? He asked. I smiled. I know everything. If you've ever touched it, I know. If I want to, anyway, I said smoothly. And honestly, I didn't really want to know this time, and I usually try to respect everyone's privacy. But I have no control over what I learn, I said blankly. I may not be of royal blood, but I have my own dragon, and apparently that's all I need to have a predestined mate. That was my only thought. I'd have freaked the fuck out had this happened without my knowledge. This morning, when I'd woken up and felt off, as well as later in the morning when I realized that I couldn't feel anyone, I'd had a minor freakout. But then I remembered Kiefer's mating, as well as Nikolai's, and I'd instantly calmed. Then promptly freaked out again over the fact that I was mated. I'd left without another thought, going straight to Wink's house to confirm my suspicions. Last night, I'd been drawn to her, but this morning, after seeing her again, it had taken everything I had not to pull her into my arms. And to see my mark on her neck, that had been everything. I wasn't even ashamed that she had my handprint on her neck. Territorial didn't even begin to describe what I felt. You've been holding out on me, Kiefer said stiffly. I shrugged. I never signed up for anything that said specifically what I did and didn't have to tell you, I said, glaring at Kiefer. I was so fucking tired of being treated like I was an outsider. I did just as much work as the rest of the fucking dragon riders. In fact, I likely did more. Yet not one of those motherfuckers would ever do anything for me the way they'd do it for another one of the riders. I got up and started walking, heading for the bus stop. If I remembered correctly, the buses ran hourly, even this early in the morning. "Where are you going?" Kiefer asked. "The bus stop," I answered. "Why aren't you riding Mace?" Kiefer asked in confusion. I looked over at my dragon. "Because he pisses me off," I answered. Kiefer didn't answer, and I didn't bother to wait for him to come up with a reason that I had to stay. I had a woman to find. Not that it'd be very hard. Not all of my powers left me. That or I'd already started getting them back. Either way, I could see exactly where she went, so I could follow her very easily. What surprised me, though, was the fact that she went to my house. I could have guessed 1,000 different places as to where she would have gone, and my place wouldn't have even made the list. Color me fucking surprised. I walked through the door and immediately noticed the difference. Normally, when Wink had been in my place, the scent of her was faint. This time I would have been able to tell she was here even if I hadn't known she was. The smell of her shampoo, as well as the lotion she used, seemed to permeate the air, almost like it was circulating through my ventilation system. It was intoxicating and arousing. I didn't bother to hide my steps. She would hear me. She was up in the loft, and although she was trying valiantly to hide, I could see her shoes. So I went about, tossing my shirt, seeing as it was covered in sweat, walked into the kitchen, and started cooking breakfast. It was only 9 in the morning. It was still a good time to eat. I would have reconsidered had it been a little later. I hated when there was that lull between breakfast and lunch, or lunch and dinner. I never knew whether to eat or not. Most of the time I didn't. "You know I'm here, don't you?" she asked softly from the top of the stairs. She was looking at me from between the slats of the landing, and I nodded absently as I grabbed a blob of butter with a spatula and plopped it down into the pan. "How?" she asked. "Followed your trail," I answered. "The same one that you followed of that murderer?" she asked softly. "Yep," I answered, reaching for the eggs. By the time I got the bacon out of the frying pan and all the eggs cooked, she was sitting at the bar. "Your shirt is off," she observed. I looked down at my chest and then up at her face. "Would you look at that?" I said, with as straight of a face as I could manage. "It is gone." "Wow." She sighed. "I don't know what I did, but I'm sorry," she said. "You're not going to hurt me." It was a statement, not a question. I didn't bother to reply. She sniffled and I looked up sharply. And to my horror, I saw the first tear slip down one cheek. Another tear soon followed. "You're crying?" I asked in outrage. I didn't handle tears well. There was something about them that had the power to undo me. "You can ignore me," she said. "It's just hormones." "Hormones?" I asked. "You know, hormones. It's that time of the month. It just happens," she said flippantly. "So there's no reason for the tears. You're just doing it," I observed. She nodded. "It happens. A lot. Sometimes I cry because I need to, like after I've seen a sad video on YouTube, or sometimes I hear a song that I really like, and the beauty of it moves me to tears," she explained. "So you're crying now. Not because anything's amiss, but because you're a girl," I said. "Do I have that correct?" She shrugged, causing me to sigh. "That means nothing to me. If you're going to speak girl, you're going to have to give me a cheat guide or something. I never had a single female in my life besides my sister, and that was a very long time ago," I told her. She glared at me, the tears gone. "You're not very nice," she observed. I knew that. I couldn't help it either. "I was raised in an orphanage," I said. "I have absolutely no tact. If you want hearts and flowers, you're going to have trouble getting that from me." "Who says that I want that from you?" she challenged. "I've only known you for a very short period of time. Not even long enough to form a valid opinion of you or your character." I sighed. "Did you look in a mirror yet?" I asked her. She stiffened and squirmed. "No," she lied. My brows rose. "You didn't?" I asked. "Not even a little bit?" She was cute when she lied. Her nose had a small upturn to it, meaning I knew exactly when she started to lie because a little crease would appear on the bridge of her nose as she concentrated on what to say. "Fine," she snarled. "What did you do to me?" I laughed. "I have no fucking clue," I said honestly. "Magic, I guess." She pursed her lips in disgust. "Seriously?" she asked. That's all you've got? Magic? I shrugged. I don't know what else to call it, I told her. Prove it, she challenged. I can't, I said. Of course you would say that. Because why wouldn't you, she wondered. If I was trying to lie about how you got a tattoo that I put there, I'd lie and say it was magic too. Although I'd have a backup plan in case you didn't fall for it. I snorted. Have you ever heard of dragon riders? I asked her. She nodded reluctantly, sliding down onto the ledge and hooking both of her arms through the ladder that led up to the top. Of course I have, she answered once she was situated. What about them? It wasn't often that I found someone that didn't know anything about them. Then again, the majority of the people I came into contact with were the types who wanted to do us harm. I was what you would call an enforcer. The person who made sure that the dragon riders, as a whole, didn't get into trouble in any way. If something happened, I was dispatched to take care of it. If there was a breach at the sanctuary, I was the first one to investigate it, which was also another reason why I was living on the outskirts of the sanctuary and not actually in the sanctuary. I wanted to keep my ear to the ground, and I didn't want to deal with the fucking rules and regulations that were required of me when I was living on sanctuary land, such as watching the younglings. I wasn't often in the mood to deal with them, not because I didn't like them per se, but because they made me wish I had those rose-colored glasses on that they did when it came to this world. Then there were the women who showed up whenever the fuck they felt like it, such as Nikolai's new woman. She was a constant pain in my ass, and she brought Kiefer's woman along for the ride. I didn't like the fact that they paid so much attention to me. It felt wrong, like my heart hurt, and I didn't want anything to do with that. When the heart became involved, things never worked out right. Such as when my sister had been adopted and I wasn't. I loved my sister with all my heart, and she'd been the one thing that had kept me from going crazy our first 10 years together. But then our parents had died, and instead of grieving, I had more worry piled on top of my already overburdened young shoulders. "You're stalling," the woman currently trying to break into my heart said. I grimaced. "I'm a dragon rider." Silence followed my announcement. So much of it, in fact, that I had to stop what I was doing with the eggs and look up to make sure she hadn't fainted from the news. She hadn't, and she was looking at me like I'd grown a second head. "Say what?" she asked. I scowled at the incredulity that was tinging her voice. "You heard me," I said. "Your eggs are finished." She started scooting down the ladder, turning around and presenting me with her perfect ass as she maneuvered. "How'd you know what I like?" she asked. "You make them every day you clean here," I said. "Just figured that was the type you liked the best." She narrowed her eyes. "That still doesn't explain how you know I like them fried unless you've watched me." I chose to stay silent. "Ian," she said, "you're not going to tie me up in the basement and torture me sexually, are you?" I blinked. "I don't have a basement," I said smartly, scratching my head in confusion. "I noticed you didn't say anything about the sex torture part," she observed dryly. I sighed. "I'm not going to kill you, nor harm you in any way," I told her. "You were the one who showed up at my place, not the other way around." She didn't like what I had to say, and chose to tell me so with a glare. I turned around to the sink to hide my laughter, dropping the pot I'd used to cook the eggs down into the sink, before turning back around once I had it under control. "This is good," she said. "Now convince me about your magic." I pulled up my sleeves and pointed out where she'd touched me earlier. "Look familiar?" I asked her, indicating the burn imprint of her hand. Her lips thinned. "Now look at your arm," I ordered her. She reluctantly pulled up the sleeve of her shirt and her eyes widened. "You've turned me into a mutant," she cried. I sighed and leaned against the counter, eyeing her. "I don't know where you come up with this shit," I said, "but if you'd just give me a chance to explain before you start name-calling, some of this would be solved." She growled, and it was so cute that my cock actually twitched. "Fine. You have 5 minutes before I'm leaving," she snapped. I chose to explain, despite her bitchy attitude. "I'm a dragon rider. I first came into my powers when I was 19, which was a tad earlier than most dragon riders do," I said. "My powers that I've gained from my dragon, Mace, are nowhere near what the other dragon riders have acquired." "So what are they?" Wink snapped. I smiled, knowing I had her. "Well, you used one of them on me today. Rapid energy depletion," I said. She blinked. "I used it?" she questioned. I nodded. "Figured it out about a half second before I was out. Should have seen it coming. I knew you had my powers." So what else? She pushed. I smiled and ducked my head so she couldn't see my lips lift. I can see anything that's wrong with the body and heal it. Kind of like combining an EKG, MRI, CAT scan, and X-ray all in one, I continued. She blinked at me. You can see what's inside me right now? She asked. If I was touching you, yes, I said. I can also see DNA outside of the body. Meaning the other night when you asked me how I knew that guy wasn't in your apartment, I really knew. I could see his DNA trail lead in only one direction, away from the body. By DNA, you mean what? She asked. I smiled. Skin cells, hair, saliva, semen, I said. None of those last two were present that night, but I could see exactly where that man went. She nodded, her hand twisting around in her hair. That's kind of fantastical, she said finally, looking at me. I'm going to take a nap. I need to think about this. I nodded. There's more to tell, isn't there? She asked as she stood. I nodded. Okay, she said softly. Tell me later. You know where you are sleeping? I asked her. Where to go? She looked at me like I was stupid. I clean this house 3 times a week. I think I can find an empty bedroom. Try not to trash your house while I'm not watching you, she ordered. With that, she left, leaving me with a smile on my face. One that quickly melted away at the thought of her being in my house napping and not in my bed. Yes, her being in my house while I was here should be fun indeed. Chapter 4 It's a beautiful day to leave me alone. Ian's secret thoughts. Ian. Who ate your bowl of sunshine this morning, Thundercloud? Wink's annoyingly sweet voice asked from somewhere. Tired, I muttered, opening my eye only enough to glare at her before closing it again. And I was tired. I'd spent half the night patrolling over the sanctuary, and the other half fighting with that stupid fuck Pharaoh. Not to mention, when I did finally get a chance to go to sleep, thoughts of the woman 2 doors down from my room left me in a state I wasn't fully willing to examine. Are you just getting in? She asked as she looked at me warily. I nodded. Patrolled. I shuffled to my bedroom, having only gotten up 2 minutes before to answer a call about Pharaoh from Kiefer. Now I was heading back to my bed. For at least a solid 2 hours. Hopefully 3. I didn't have to be at the meeting Kiefer had demanded until 12. If I went to bed right now, I'd get 3 hours and 9 minutes. That gave me 15 minutes to get ready and go. Wink had different ideas, however. You were supposed to talk to me this morning, she said at my back, following me into my room. I felt her heated gaze on my back and nearly smiled when I lifted my shirt up and off my head. She squeaked and shuffled, causing me to actually smile this time. What are you doing? She asked worriedly. I'm getting back in bed for a few hours before I have to be at Kiefer's place, I answered, starting on my belt. My hands felt like sausages, though, as I fumbled with my belt. I was just about to say fuck it and go to bed with them on when I felt dainty hands push mine away. When's the last time you slept? She asked me, undoing my belt with comical ease. When you put me into a medically induced coma for 2 hours, I said. She snorted. I thought of it more of a passing out on your part rather than a coma on my part, she said defensively. I shrugged and unbuttoned my pants, thankful that they were old and worn in, meaning I didn't have to struggle to get them off. I fell face first into the bed, rolled my head to the side only enough to set my alarm, and instantly fell asleep. I completely missed the fact that Wink stayed in the room with me and watched my every breath for nearly 10 minutes. In fact, she'd come to check on me multiple times while I'd been asleep, something I realized within 2 minutes of my alarm. I groaned and rolled over, staring up at the ceiling with bleary eyes. I blinked rapidly, trying to clear the fog. You up? She asked. Can I go with you to wherever you're going? I nodded and rolled to a sitting position. Yeah, I muttered darkly. She snorted and tossed something at me, and I opened my eye only enough to see it was my phone. What is it? I asked. It's been ringing on and off for about 2 hours now, she said. I took it out of here after it rang the first time. You really needed the sleep. I glared at her. Thanks, I muttered dryly, rolling over and forcing feet to the ground. My eyelids felt like they were glued to sandpaper as I shuffled my way into the bathroom. It never even occurred to me that I was naked until I heard Wink's swift inhalation, followed by her muffled gasp, causing me to find my first smile that morning. Put some coffee on, would you? I yelled over my shoulder. My sides were heaving with contained laughter as I did, looking down at my dick. I might need to tell her that I sometimes shed my clothes in my sleep.
Okay, she whispered breathlessly. Coffee, yes. Okay, I can do that.
She wasn't moving, though, which caused me to turn around and look at her. Her eyes immediately dropped to my crotch, where my morning erection stood proud and strong. Mostly the erection had everything to do with her waking me up, though, and nothing to do with it being morning. Coffee? I asked her. She tore her eyes away from my cock and stared at me in complete confusion.
Coffee?
She asked. Coffee, I confirmed. She blinked, then understanding dawned as a blush stole over her face.
Yeah, coffee, she said. I can do coffee.
I rolled my eyes and turned to the bathroom, slightly more awake this time. But that slight burst of energy quickly wore off once I'd taken care of my morning wood in the shower, leaving me feeling even more drained than before.
You really are out of it. What are you doing?
She asked, watching as I dunked another cookie into my coffee. My 10th one. Drinking coffee and eating a cookie. Why? I asked.
Is that what's always at the bottom of your coffee cups? She asked, leaning forward to watch what I was doing.
I shrugged. Maybe. Honestly, I couldn't tell you if I left a mess in the bottom of my coffee cup or not. I barely ever finished the coffee. Normally, I would get my fill on cookies and put the cup into the sink. It was rare if I ever finished it. Even rarer if I ever washed it.
Is it that hard for you to rinse it out once you dump it? She asked.
I shrugged. I pay you to clean up after me. Why would I bother to do something so menial as that? She narrowed her eyes.
Did you just call my profession menial? She asked carefully.
No, I said, standing up and taking one last sip of my coffee before I dumped it into the sink and set the cup in the basin. I'm calling me doing it menial. I have 100 other things I need to be doing every morning, and rinsing my cup out is menial compared to the other things I have to do. So just go see why the fuck Kiefer's been calling me all morning. She narrowed her eyes.
It takes literally 5 seconds of your time to rinse the cup, she said, picking the cup up, rinsing it, and then placing it back in the sink. It takes about 10 seconds longer to place it in the dishwasher, or even better, to fucking wash it and set it out to dry in the drying rack.
I shrugged. She narrowed her eyes.
You're not expecting me to continue cleaning, are you? She asked.
I stopped my forward progress to the door and turned. If you don't, someone else will have to come clean, I told her honestly. So that's completely up to you. She threw her hands up in the air in exasperation. I turned before she could see the smile that overtook my face and started walking. I'd nearly made it to the door when a thought occurred to me. You really want to come with me? I asked as an afterthought. Something came and went over her face, and she shrugged.
Where are you going? She asked.
I smiled.
To the sanctuary, I said. This is like that place on Jurassic Park where they kept all those birds, she said.
The aviary, I guessed. She nodded. There's a shield surrounding the sanctuary that protects it from view, satellite and human alike, I explained, taking my own quick glance around. Seeing it through her eyes, I could see where she got that from. The entire place looked like it had a glass dome over it, and although it allowed anything that was supposed to be there to pass easily through it, anything that wasn't didn't get the same pass. The grounds were large and sprawling. There was about 30 manicured acres that the house, and I say house loosely because it was more of a mansion on steroids, sat on. On the back side of the house, there was a large pool that any of the dragon riders were free to use if they so wished it. And then there were the dragons. They were anywhere and everywhere. Wherever they wanted to be, they were.
But I can see it,
she interrupted my contemplation of the grounds. I nodded. You and I share a bond. My explanation obviously distressed her. Her mouth thinned.
I don't want to talk about it.
She fingered the handprint at her throat, and I found myself doing the same. We're going to have to talk about it sometime, I told her none too gently. She shrugged.
Then when the time comes, we'll talk. My nap wasn't long enough to process this situation, so for now we're not going to talk about it. Got it? She stated.
Oh, snap, the thick Cajun voice belonging to Jean-Luc bawled. She's feisty.
Doesn't matter if she's feisty. She's an outsider. What's she doing here? Derek, Kiefer's advisor and another dragon rider, growled. We both turned at the same time, and Derek, as well as Jean-Luc, inhaled sharply. It didn't take a genius to figure out that they'd seen the handprints on both of our throats, causing the two of them to make the connection.
Oh, mon loup, you're so screwed,
Jean-Luc said succulently. I ignored the both of them and grabbed Wink's hand and urged her through the door.
Are you sure I'm allowed in here? She asked worriedly. They didn't look too happy to see me.
If you weren't allowed in here, you wouldn't have made it through the shield, I muttered. She yanked on my